from 1 Kings 17, if you want to turn there. 1 Kings 17. While you're turning there, let me remind you, Tuesday evening, we're together on Zoom for a prayer meeting at 8 o'clock. And if you're able to join us, we'd love for you to do that. Friday morning, we're here at 9:30 in the morning to pray together. And if you're able to join us for that, we'd love to see you there. And not this Saturday, but the next, we're taking 16 young people away to Limitless Festival. Thank you to all of you who've already given to support that. If you haven't and you'd like to, please come and talk to me or Louise, and we'll help you to do that. But we're looking forward to taking 16 young people away for 5 days to seek God with them. And we're excited about all that he might do in their lives. And if you're able to invest in that, can I encourage you to do so? 1 Kings 17 and verse 1 says, "Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, 'As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years, except at my word.' Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah, 'Leave here, turn eastward, and hide in the Kereth ravine, east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook, and I have directed the ravens to supply you with food there.' So he did what the Lord had told him. He went to the Kereth ravine, east of the Jordan, and stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. Sometime later, the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, 'Go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food.' So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, 'Would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink?' As she was going to get it, he called, 'And bring me, please, a piece of bread.' 'As surely as the Lord your God lives,' she replied, 'I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. I am gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die.' Elijah said to her, 'Do not be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me. And then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land.' She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah." We've been giving some attention to encounters with God, and the God who speaks. And I wanted to think with you this morning about the God who speaks to bring direction. In the passage we've just read, Elijah goes to Ahab and declares it's not going to rain for the next few years. God directs him to a brook in the Kereth ravine where he can drink, and ravens will supply him with bread and meat. And then when the brook runs dry, God directs him to a widow in Zarephath with an endless supply of flour and oil. And a cursory reading of this, I assume most of you are familiar with the story, sort of leaves me a bit frustrated. Because in the summary of that, it all seems very straightforward for Elijah. I grew up in church. And obviously, growing up in church, you have the privilege of meeting lots of people. But there were some people I met throughout my life in church. And it was almost like they've never made a decision for themselves. You might not be familiar with them, but they would give you the impression that nothing they did in their life was out without the direction and the speaking of the Lord to them. So they would wake up and they would ask God, is it cornflakes this morning or Weetabix? And then they would go to their wardrobe and open it wide and go, what shall I wear today, Lord? And there was those people who gave you that impression that every decision they made, God was somehow directing them in it. I found it galling. Because if I lay in bed this morning and said, Lord, what should I have for breakfast? And waited for him to respond. My assumption is I'd still be in bed. If I stood at my wardrobe and went, Lord, what will I wear today? I'm not confident he's going to turn around and say, oh, that lovely pink shirt, Josh. But in all seriousness, there were these people who seemed to not do anything without the leading and the guiding of the Lord. And I, at times, was trying to make meaningful decisions about my life, trying to work out where to go, what to do, what was next, where I was. And he didn't seem to speak so clearly to me as he did to them about their cornflakes. It was almost like he was too busy picking their outfit for the day that he didn't. Don't misunderstand me. I believe God is involved and interested in the details of your life. But I, at times, got frustrated because there was people who seemed to make it out like they knew the leading of God in the stuff that didn't seem to matter, while I was trying to work out what to do with the stuff that seemed to matter and not have a clear answer. And this morning, I wanted to explore this passage with you for a moment. For this purpose, I don't want you to believe God cares less about you than those people who think he directs every step. And actually, if you look at the detail of some of the stories where God is giving leading and guidance, it's not as straightforward as we might like initially to make out. I don't want you to believe for a second that because you're caught wondering what to do next and where to go, that you're some subclass of Christian. He will lead you and direct you, but it might not be super straightforward. So on two occasions, the word of the Lord comes to Elijah. God speaks to Elijah and he gives him very specific instructions. But I'm going to suggest to you that on both occasions, the timing of that is later than I would have liked. Elijah goes to Ahab, and he stands before Ahab and he says, as surely as the Lord lives, there won't be rain or dew for the next few years, except at my word. Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah and said, go to the Kereth ravine and hide there. Elijah has gone to Ahab and declared there's going to be a drought for 3 years. I think before doing that, I might have wanted to discuss with God what the plan was for me in that drought. How am I going to survive through this, Lord? I'm happy to go and tell Ahab there's going to be a drought. But what about me? What am I going to do? Where am I going to go? How am I going to survive this season? Because the issue is not just the drought. In Ahab's eyes, Elijah's responsible for the desolation of the kingdom he's ruling over. So if you go and read 1 Kings 18, Elijah meets Obadiah, and Obadiah says to him, where have you been? Because there isn't a land on the face of this earth where the king has not sent someone looking for you and made them swear you're not there. It's not just that there's no water. It's that Elijah's responsible for this in Ahab's eyes. And Ahab's not delighted about it. And if Ahab could get rid of this prophet who's brought the drought, that would suit him rightly. Yet Elijah goes and declares there's going to be a drought. And then the word of the Lord comes to him about going to hide in the Kereth ravine and his ability to drink from the brook. It's not the way I would want it to happen. I would like God to tell me before, you're going to go speak to Ahab and then immediately head off to the Kereth ravine because I've prepared something there for you. But perhaps the next time God speaks to Elijah highlights this even more for me. 1 Kings 17 and verse 7 says, sometime later the brook dried up because there'd be no rain in the land. And then the word of the Lord came to him. Must have been great for Elijah initially. Must have been really good, right? I'm going to tell you, if I was Elijah sitting in the Kereth ravine with my little brook and the ravens bringing me bread and meat twice a day, I would have felt pretty smug. I've told them it's not going to rain. It's not going to rain. It's not raining. Here I am in my little happy place, me and God. He's bringing me food and I've got water. Ha, 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 ha. But it doesn't last forever. The brook dries up. And I can imagine sitting by the brook and beginning to notice there's not as much water in this as there was before. And then day by day trying to measure how much water I might be losing from this brook and how long it might last me. I can imagine wrestling with God about what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? God, you brought me here, but now this brook is drying up. This season is coming to an end. And I don't know what's next. How am I going to survive? And the truth is, and this might sound a little bit dramatic, but I have a tendency towards being a bit dramatic, so apologies. But by the time the brook's dry, that's it. I've succumbed myself to the fact, this is it. There's no water here. The brook's run dry. God's not said anything yet. So here I am. No water. I'm going to die. In truth, I don't ever want to wait till the brook's run dry and there's no water to hear from God about what's next. I don't ever want to wait till the season's over for God then to say, here's what's next. I would quite like God to operate like my sat-nav. Because my sat-nav doesn't just talk to me about the road I'm currently on, but the one I'm about to take. Quite often I'll join a road and my sat-nav will say to me, in 13 miles, bear right. I know 13 miles ahead of time, I'm going right. And then, again, in 2 miles, bear right. In 1 mile, bare right. In 800 yards, bare right. In 500 yards, bare right. In 300 yards, bare right. I don't know if you've ever been in the unfortunate position of getting to the end of the road and the sat-nav said nothing. And you're looking going, do I go left? Do I go right? What do I do here? I had a friend who I used to travel around the country with a bit. And his attitude was, if you don't know, just go left. Because if you just keep going left, you might end up in the same spot you started in. That was his theory. You can imagine we got lost a few times. But the truth is, I want to know not just about where I am now, but about what's coming. I want God to speak to me about what's next. And quite often I find myself at the end of the season going, well, what now? Where do I go now? And he hasn't acted like my sat-nav. And he hasn't told me in advance, what's next? I wonder if my desire to know the plan in advance is an absence of faith. See, I'm happy to submit myself to God and his plan for my life, as long as he tells me about it first. As long as he communicates that with me first, so that I can then come to terms with it, deal with it, make my own thoughts around it. Psalm 139 tells me all of my days were written in his book before one of them came to be. I want you to hear me clearly this morning. The absence of clarity for you about direction is not an absence of plan on God's part. The absence of clarity for you about direction is not an absence of plan on God's part. He formed you in your mother's womb. And all of your days were written in his book before one of them came to be. You are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works he prepared in advance for you to do. And so the absence of clarity about direction for you is not an absence of plan on his part. And if I can say something, it takes more faith to not know than to know at times. It takes more faith to not know than to know. Let me read to you Acts 16, verse 6. It says, Paul and his companions traveled throughout the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been kept by the Holy Spirit from preaching the word in the province of Asia. When they came to the border of Mysia, they entered Bithynia. They tried to enter Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus would not allow them to. So they passed by Mysia and went down to Troas. During the night, Paul had a vision of a man of Macedonia standing and begging him, come over to Macedonia and help us. After Paul had seen the vision, we got ready at once to leave for Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Paul's on his second missionary journey. He's met Timothy in Lystra and brought him with him. That's the start of Acts 16. And they've set out from there and they're traveling around Phrygia, you can have your own, and Galatia. Not because of some great word. Not because the Lord spoke to them and said, do that. But because they were kept from going to Asia. That's why they're in Galatia and Phrygia. And And then they get to the border of Mysia, and they try to go into Bithynia. And Jesus, the Spirit of Jesus, stops them. So they went to Troas, and there Paul had a vision. Do you know when I would have wanted the vision? When I was in Lystra. Do you know when I would have liked God to speak to me about where was next? Before I set out on the journey. Do you know when I would have liked God to show up and tell me where I was to go and what I was to do? Before I'd left. Yet what you find is Paul and his companions leave and they travel. And they have an intention to go to one place and they're stopped. And then they're traveling, they come to a border of another place and they think they're going in and they're stopped. Can you imagine Timothy's thoughts in these moments? The Apostle Paul has come and taken you as a disciple under his wing. Come and travel with me. And the man doesn't seem to know what he's doing. He's tried to go to one place, he's been stopped. He's tried to go to another place, he's been stopped. There's something about this that I want you to try. God doesn't always speak when I would like him to. And sometimes I have to just do what I think's right. I have to do what he's already asked me to do in his words, to walk out what I believe is right and let him direct me on the journey. Some of you are sitting waiting for direction. You need to just start the journey. And let him direct you as you go. Let me say honestly, I think I've learned more about the Lord's leading from his no's than his go's. I think God's directed me more by telling me, no, Josh, you're not doing that, than he has by saying, go there. On Wednesday, it'll be 3 years since I was inducted as the pastor into this church. Let me just talk to you about that journey for a moment. Very honestly. Because let me tell you what didn't happen. I wasn't sitting finishing the previous season of my life when the Lord suddenly said, Josh, go to Sunderland. I had been in Bible college in 2020, and at the end of 2020, I'd finished that. At the start of 2021, I was trying to work out, what do I do now? There was a couple of offers made to me. They didn't seem like appropriate offers to take in terms of employment, so I turned those down. But I applied for a job with the church. It wasn't this church. And they liked my application, wanted to interview me, but kept extending the deadline for applications. So the application deadline was meant to be the end of February. And then they contacted me and said, oh, we're going to run it till March. I didn't have anything else to do, so I said, fine. And then they said, oh, we're going to keep it open till May. Do you know what was crystal clear to me at that point? They didn't want me. They didn't want me. They told me they were going to interview. They wrote me a lovely email telling me how much they liked my application, how good it was, how they appreciated my CV, and, you know, they wanted to interview me. But I thought, I'm going to go to an interview just to get told no. While that was going on, early in 2021, a regional leader wanted to speak to me. Because he wanted to offer me a church. It wasn't this church. And what I said was, I'm 26. Are you dumb? I didn't say that to him. I said it to somebody else who was trying to ask me to consider this. I don't know if I meant to know this, but the church interviewed, this church interviewed somebody else. And they were willing to have him. And he said no. I have no question. Please hear what I'm saying. That God brought me here. But it wasn't super straightforward. It wasn't the Lord suddenly opening the heavens and saying, Josh, Sunderland. So I started here on Saturday the 24th of July. I moved into my house on Friday the 23rd of July. And I had no water. I was unprepared in many senses. But God spoke to me in that season as much by telling me no and the refusal and the rejection as by opening the door of opportunity. And so sometimes he doesn't speak when you want him to. Sometimes it's not as clear as you might like it to be. And so let me, 1 Kings 17 and verse 9. The Lord said to Elijah, go off at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. The word directed there is literally commanded. I have commanded a widow there to supply you with food. Now, I don't know what you would expect on the end of that. I don't know what you would anticipate you might be met by when you arrived in Zarephath. But let me remind you what Elijah meets. A woman who, when he asks her for bread, says, I'm here getting sticks to make my final loaf and die. The Lord apparently has commanded her to supply Elijah with food. But she doesn't seem to be overly aware of that. Elijah says, could you bring me some bread? And she says, as surely as the Lord your God lives, I've got nothing. What would you like me to do? I'm here collecting sticks so that I can have my final bit of bread with my boy and then we can wait to die together. Do you know what I would assume if I was Elijah in that moment? This is not my woman. As a man of God, like, you'd like to do something for her, to bless her, to keep her child and her alive, but I would be saying, this is clearly not the person the Lord has prepared. Isn't it staggering? The woman he sends Elijah to has nothing. Elijah has been eating like a king at the Kerith Ravine. He's been eating meat twice a day. For common people, meat was reserved for special occasions. The Lord's been treating him well. If I arrived at Zarephath and a woman said to me, I've got nothing, my first assumption would be, this is not the person the Lord's leading me to. There must be other widows here. My second conversation with God would be, what about the ravens? What are they doing now that I'm not in the Kerith Ravine? Because it would suit me much better not to constantly watch this woman get the little bit of flour that's left in the jar and pour it back out again, but have supernatural bread and meat supplied from heaven. Yet that's the person God leads Elijah to. And in the midst of the mess, something utterly miraculous happens. The truth is, the woman didn't really want them. And if you read the rest of 1 Kings 17, you see that. As her son dies, and I started this series with you with the intention of trying to give more meaningful consideration to what it looks like to have encounters with God. Because as much as I believe God shows up and changes everything at times, I also believe he shows up and doesn't. I also believe he meets with his people and they have to leave and get on with some stuff that's difficult and awkward and hard. I also believe he just shows up and speaks comfort and encouragement. That it's not always divine intervention and instant transformation. That sometimes it's divine intervention and it's much the same. But in the direction thing, I've got some idea of what it's like to live frustrated knowing, what am I meant to do? Wrestling with God over what's meant to happen now. I feel like I can relate to Elijah looking at the brook running dry, knowing a season's coming to an end, and having no idea what's next. And there are some people who would have you believe that God tells them whether or not to have Weetabix or cornflakes. But I also see in Scripture the challenge of starting the journey not knowing where it finishes, not knowing the full plan, not having a full idea of what's going on, that God speaks later than I would like him to. A number of weeks ago, we looked at Exodus 14, where the Israelites and Moses are backed against the Red Sea, and the Egyptian army's coming towards them. And they're all despairing about how they're going to die. Do you know when I would have liked to know that God was going to ask me to part the Red Sea? Before we started the journey. But it comes in the moment where their backs are pressed against the Red Sea and they've nowhere else to go. That God says, actually, I'm leading you through this. Great. Do you think you could have mentioned that earlier? Because I've had 5 heart attacks standing here looking at them coming at me. Abraham, when he's 70, I think it's Genesis 12. God calls him and says, go to a land I will show you. No. Show me now and I'll go there. Does anybody know what I'm saying? Tell me now and then I'll go. Don't expect me to start walking and then find out. Because what happens if I go the wrong way? What happens if I make a mistake? What happens if I don't get my left or right? Right? Isn't it funny? None of us would assume the Apostle Paul fell out of the will of God in Acts 16, even though he got told no on multiple occasions in the things he tried to do. Yet some of us are held captive by fear that we might accidentally make the wrong decision. I have been praying for those of you who are ending a season and trying to work out what's next, that you would not believe that you can accidentally fall out of the will of God. He will lead you. Proverbs 16, in a man's heart, he plans his course, but the Lord establishes his steps. And let me tell you, the establishing the steps, sometimes it's him saying, no, you're not going to Bithynia. No, you're not going to Asia. No, that's not the way I'm taking you. Sometimes he's establishing your steps by the application deadline. Just keep extending. I believe God speaks and he brings direction. There's no question for me about that. But I don't think it's as Disney as we would like to make it at times. I think sometimes I've got to start the journey and wait for him to say something. I think sometimes he brings me to places where he said something to me. But it's difficult and it's awkward. And there's a woman with nothing. And he's going to do something miraculous in the situation. But it doesn't seem as good as what I had or what it was. I need to shut up because time's gone. But as I consider the story of Elijah, it's utterly miraculous. And yet as I think about it, it's fairly messy. I want you to know, without a question, he loves you. He's outworking his purpose in your life. He's got a plan for you. And he will lead you and guide you. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll sit every day knowing exactly what that looks like. It doesn't mean you'll always know the plan about what's next. See, as a young Christian, I came to accept the fact that God might not tell me everything that happens in my life. I came to accept that. But I did not come to accept the fact that he wouldn't tell me about at least the next season. That was more difficult. And it takes much greater faith to walk without knowing where you're going. And trust that he will establish your steps than it does for him to say, here's the 5-year plan. There were people's lives impacted by Paul's missionary journey because he didn't go straight from Lystra to Macedonia. Because he went through Phrygia and Galatia. He got to the border of Mysia. He went to Troas. People's lives were changed because he didn't just go straight from Lystra to Macedonia. What might God do on the journey to what's next for you? Because you trust his leading rather than wait to know the plan. Should we stand together and worship?